Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute, on air and online, this is Intersection.
Hello and welcome to Intersection, where people and ideas meet. I'm Reuben Stern. This week, voters finally are headed to the polls, or to be accurate, some voters are going to the polls. If the best projections hold true, then at least a quarter of the people eligible to vote won't. In the 2008 general election, nearly 40% of eligible voters did not cast a ballot. In non-presidential elections, those turnout numbers are usually even less encouraging. So how does it affect things when a large share of the voting age population is not involved? What would it take to get more people to go to the polls? And would the outcomes look any different if everyone actually did participate? Joining me in the studio to talk more about voter turnout and what we can expect now and perhaps in the future, first, John Petrosik is a professor and chair of the Political Science Department at the University of Missouri. He specializes in electoral politics, public opinion, and voting. Welcome to our program, John Petrosik.
Thank you very much.
Glad to have you with us today.
Pleased to be here.
We also have with us today Terry Smith. He is the Executive Vice President and Dean for Academic Affairs at Columbia College. He's an American politics enthusiast and provides regular political commentary on KBIA. Welcome to our program, Terry Smith.
Thank you. Always good to be here.
Glad to have you with us as well. We also have with us at the table Marvin Stemmons. He is a promoter and organizer in Columbia. This year, he is leading a Swag the Vote campaign aimed at encouraging young people to go and vote. Welcome to our program, Marvin Stemmons.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you with us as well. We hope that you in our audience will join the conversation too. What motivates you to go and vote? Or if you don't vote, we'd like to hear your reasoning as well. So give us a call. Our phone number is 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. To start off our conversation here, as part of KBIA's Rural Diners Project, a team of our reporters has been out visiting local diners across mid-Missouri, trying to find out the issues that people care about most in this election. We're going to play a clip, and the clip we're about to play was recorded at Hewer's Cafe in Sturgeon. The people in the clip were asked for their thoughts on the politicians on this year's ballot, and here is some of what they had to say.
Well, let me summarize it this way. We have one party that seems to want to turn the wealth of the country over to every deadbeat, poorly motivated, ne'er-do-well. And we have the other party that seems to want to turn the wealth of the country over to the oil companies, the big insurance companies, and so forth, and I am equally disgusted with each.
The only time we see them is at election time. They'll walk in the door, vote for me, and out the door they go.
Choosing a political candidate to vote for has become an issue of choosing the lesser evil. That old joke, you know, I can tell when a politician's lying, their lips are moving. There's a frightening level of truth in that joke. They say what they want to get elected and forget what they promised to do.
The American people are not that unintelligent. We vote because we feel like we're supposed to vote and because it's our patriotic duty. But we've reached a point where we have a very, very poor selection of people to vote for. I haven't given up. I vote.
Will I vote? Yes, I vote. I don't miss a vote. This year, and I wish I didn't have to vote, but I'm going to.
Okay, again, those were residents in Sturgeon as part of the KBIA Rural Diners Project interviewed for that particular clip. The full video is online. You can go to kbia.org, follow the link for Rural Diners, and you'll see the whole thing. That last little bit there, this year I wish I didn't have to vote, but I'm going to. John Petrosik, does that about sum it up?
No, I think it doesn't. That's not to say that there aren't a lot of people who share that point of view, but most Americans actually feel that it's an obligation. They look forward to participating, and they're not always enthusiastic about the choices they have or the kinds of things they associate with politicians, but very less than a majority have as negative an attitude as was expressed in that clip. People tell you they care about election outcomes. They will tell you, not universally, they'll tell you that, in fact, public officials more or less keep their promise. They have trust in government. It's not at an all-time high, but it's nowhere near as low as that clip indicates.
Marvin, would you agree with that in terms of the people that you are seeing out there as you're trying to get more young people to vote?
I think the younger generation just excited to vote. I mean, I think they get caught up on who their parents want to vote for or who people that they older than them. I found out that 18-year-olds, 21 and under, they really excited about voting. I just feel like they second term, you start to take it more serious. I think you start paying more attention.
Right. Terry Smith, your thoughts on the plight of the voter today in terms of how they think about that activity of voting?
My guess would be that if you had taken a camera crew out to Hewer's every election for the last 50 years, the week before the election, you'd probably get people saying pretty much the same thing. and that's not cynical. It's just that I think that's really not new, what we heard. And, of course, I was cherry-picked as well. I mean, there were probably, if you saw the whole interview, there'd probably be some people who would, as Marvin said, you know, kind of excited about it, and it is their civic duty. But the interesting thing about Marvin's comment about 18-year-olds is that they might be awfully enthusiastic about voting when they register and when they turn out, but as John knows, the older you get, the more you're likely to turn out, and the worst voting turnout is the younger voting group, and it's just hard to get them sometimes to register and then to get them to the polls.
Right. We have a caller on the line. I want to go ahead and bring the caller in. Miriam from Columbia, are you with us?
Yes.
Great. Thanks for joining the program and giving us a call today.
You're welcome.
Okay, so what do you think about this question of people voting and the numbers of people who don't?
Well, I agree that the younger generations are not getting to the polls. I mean, I'll be 27 coming later this year, and I've never gone to vote. Ever.
Really? And why is that?
Well, I mean, at least for the presidential elections, you know, there's a variety of factors, but at least for presidential elections, you know, having heard about the Electoral College and how that works in grade school, I thought, okay, if the person who's casting our vote for us has the possibility or the option of, you know, arbitrarily changing their vote and going against the popular vote, then really what's the point? If they're going to make up their mind either way, does my vote really matter? Hmm. You know, and right. So I would really think of getting rid of the Electoral College, and especially since we're migrating to more networked and more electronic solutions for voting, just use those.
Right. Well, let me ask our panelists that. In terms of that question of the Electoral College and how likely it is that those people are representing the votes that happen in each state, does it happen much that electoral votes swap and don't go with the way a state went?
It's rare. It has happened, and every now and again some quirky individual will cast a vote other than the vote he should have cast given the state vote. But it's pretty rare, partly because the people who cast the vote are picked by the parties and they're loyal partisans, and those are the electors who want their candidate to win. It's only in very unusual circumstances. I think there have been some cases in the South where one or two Democrats decided not to vote for the Democratic candidate because he was the wrong kind of Democrat from their point of view. But that's a fairly rare instance, mm-hmm. and it's not something I would worry about.
Right.
And I'd like to ask your listener to,
yeah, of course,
to consider the fact that the first vote on that ballot is going to be for president, but if she's living in Boone County, she's going to have another 25 or so choices that she can make. Mm-hmm. And the smaller the constituency, like a county or a legislative district, the more likely it is that her vote will have an impact. I mean, there are lots and lots, as John knows, of examples of ties or one vote making a difference. And so there's some really funny stories about that. But just because you have a little bit of cynicism about the presidential vote, don't let that deter you from going, because there are lots of other things for you to vote on.
Right. Mm-hmm. Fair enough. And the other part of that, you know, especially on the local level, is that, you know, for me personally, I've moved once every year since I was 18. And it gets to that point where I haven't paid attention just because I'm never there long enough to get to know who the people are. You know, right now I've been in the same community for 3 years, but moving in different houses in this particular community. And so that's been, you know, better than usual, right?
Are you going to vote this year?
This year was the first year I've registered, but I've moved since I've registered, so I don't even know if I can still use that card at this rate. Is that something I can do?
Well, if you're in, you said you lived in Columbia, right?
Well, I live in Fayette currently, but I am calling from Columbia.
Right. Yeah, I mean, usually if you're still in the same county as where you started, it gets really easy. When you swap counties, it gets a little dicey, but, I mean, it's still the day before, so you may be able to get that sorted out with the county clerk and still be able to cast your ballot.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know what the state law is, and it is a matter of state law. You may know because you do more voter organization.
Marvin, help us out here.
You could go to Show Me. You can go to the website Show Me, and it'll pull up a lot of stuff about whether you register to vote or not, and you change address. Matter of fact, I think my fiance just did it day before last. But I'm kind of lost with the caller. I don't understand what she was asking, because she says she's never voted. She doesn't know if she's going to vote this year. I'm trying to see what she was wanting to know or ask, because we need you to go out and vote. If you are registered, we need you to vote tomorrow. For whoever you want to vote for. I mean, especially in Missouri, you know, we have a lot of, like he said, we have a lot of things on the ballot that, one way or another, you'd be surprised. Your vote may count. Break a tie.
Yep. Well, Mary, I want to open it up for us to keep going here. What I was going to suggest, if you'll hold on the line, one of our producers will help connect you with some resources so that we can actually answer your question for you offline here. But I want to keep going on this and give some other people a chance to call in. Again, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about voter turnout, and joining me in the studio are John Petrosik, who is a professor and chair of the Political Science Department at the University of Missouri, Terry Smith, who's the Executive Vice President and Dean for Academic Affairs at Columbia College, and Marvin Stemmons, leader of the Swag the Vote campaign in Columbia that encourages young people to vote. For those of you in our audience, how have your own thoughts about voting changed over the years? We'd love for you to give us a call as well. Our phone number, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. We'd like to remind you that Intersection is broadcast live every Monday at 2 on KBIA and online at kbia.org. You can be part of the conversation at that time and watch our video stream by going to kbia.org and following the link for Intersection. If you have questions for our panelists, you can also feel free to call in with those. Again, our number, 573-882-8925. I want to follow up on this. One of the things that Miriam said is, you know, if you move a lot or if you, you know, for various other reasons, it can get complicated in our system. What about that? What about making voting easier? John Petrosik, let's start with you on that.
Well, my first thought when she said she had moved a lot was that she had the classic profile of a person who has low turnout rates, because registration is the hurdle, and people who are moving a lot probably have all kinds of other things going on in their lives as well, and that gets in the way of registration. And that was a much more serious issue, gosh, as little as a decade ago than it is today. There's almost, Missouri is actually a pretty conservative state when it comes to registering people and making voting easy. It's one of the less easy, more difficult places in which to vote, but most places work overtime to get people registered these days. And so that isn't as much of an impediment as it used to be, and the laws have been changed now so that, for example, people who apply for social services wind up getting the old motor voter law made it very easy to register. And the real problem is that they have to register, and if you have the kind of unsettled residence that she has, particularly given that she's young, the college student is a good example of that kind of person, they have very low turnout rates because they have relatively lower registration rates and they have all the distractions of residential mobility. It's also one of the things that seems to be get in the way of turnout rates for minority voters, because they tend to have higher rates of residential mobility than some stereotypic, middle-class person. So registration is a real hurdle. Residential mobility is a hurdle. And the United States does not deal with this as well as some other countries. Just as a side note, I've lived in Europe for a while, at various points in my life. Usually when you move someplace, you have to register with the police. They need to know where you are. They keep track of people over there. You register with the police, you also register to vote.
That's all in European countries.
Belgium, the Netherlands, Germany does that. They just, you know, and I presume other countries do as well, but they keep track of people, and a lot of things issue from that. But the short of it is they have a focus on their population. They know who's there. They know who's where people are. They know who should be voting. And, of course, in some places, you get penalized when you don't vote.
And you guys think any of that would fly in this country?
Not a chance.
I mean, it's actually getting easy to register to vote. I mean, if you really think about it, with social media, I mean, this problem is going to be eliminated just a matter of time. Then people will find other excuses to have. I mean, let's face it. I mean, if we just sit here and want to make excuses for people not voting, you can find one.
Right.
The object is take the same responsibility that we do in everything else, register to vote.
And what are the excuses that you hear, Marvin, when you're out talking to people?
Main one, I move a lot. My vote don't count. I mean, at some point in your life, you have to realize your vote do count. Because like Mr. Terry said, it's the state and the county you live in that where your vote matters, to me anyway. That's how I look at it. I mean, why complain about things if you're not going to get out here and change it? The main thing that made me interested in getting people to vote is back to school, no tax that weekend. I noticed Columbia still tax you for city taxes. Why? Nobody went out and voted when it was on the amendment. But everybody's crying about we still got to pay taxes. Nobody went out and voted.
Right. So making that connection between the things that are decided and the actual practice of going to the polls, for a lot of people, they don't make the connection.
They got an excuse.
Interesting.
Well, there's some other things. They're not serious impediments, but maybe the cumulative effect of them. For example, and you were talking about Europe. In Europe, a lot of elections are held on weekends, not a working day. Some places they have election days or holidays. And some states, Missouri's fairly restrictive, probably more than, you know, kind of on this restrictive side of average. In Minnesota, you can register to vote when you go to the polls to vote. So, yeah. I mean, it doesn't get much more permissive than that.
So you can register right then on the spot when you go to cast the ballot.
Same day registration.
So, you know, that's awfully, I mean, you don't, the excuses get checked off one by one, you know, when you have things going on like that.
Right, correct. And I agree with you. I mean, by the time, I mean, they're going to make it so easy for us, you're going to be able to vote on Facebook.
I hope we don't get carried away with that. This is America, and we have a tradition of playing with the vote. I've lived places where that happens, and I've been involved in places where that happens. I would be a little careful about releasing all the restraints.
Okay, again,
share your general sentiment. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Oh, I understand.
If you want a fraudulent election, that's one way to make it happen, by releasing all the, you know, sort of the restraints we have on registration, turnout, and making sure we have the right people there.
Yeah, but, and finding that balance is going to be one of the challenges, right?
Time is going to bring about a change. I mean,
I agree.
If you look at how it used to be done and how it's done now, because you have to get with modern day time in anything that we do. And I think that that's what's happening now, that all the old is starting to get out of the way, and then you got the different generations coming in. I mean,
Yeah, I want to come back to this issue of changing the voting process to make it easier for people, but I want to remind everybody first that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about voter turnout, and joining me in the studio are John Petrosik, professor and chair of the Political Science Department at the University of Missouri, Terry Smith, executive vice president and dean for academic affairs at Columbia College, and Marvin Stemmons, leader of the Swag the Vote campaign in Columbia, which is encouraging young people to vote. For those of you in our audience, how important do you think it is to increase voter turnout? We'd love to hear your thoughts. Give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. We have a caller on the line, in fact. Joyce has been waiting patiently. Joyce, are you with us?
Yes.
Great. Thanks for calling in today, Joyce.
You're welcome. I teach college students, so this might go into that classification of young people not voting.
Mm-hmm.
Every day that they're in class, I send a pad of paper around there to sign in. Usually there's a question of the day. They get excited about those sometimes. So just before it is the end of registration time for voting, question of the day is, are you registered to vote? Today's pad of paper that went around was, will you vote? And I have almost 100% that I take out of that 100% the few foreign-born students that I have that are not registered, will never register, because they'll be going back to their country of origin.
Mm-hmm.
So when I exclude those from the list, I almost have 100% of my students who are registered to vote and will be going to vote.
Right.
Now, I never ask them who they vote for. That's not my priority.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if we did a few more things like that, we might see some difference with young adults.
Just in terms of asking them, you mean?
Yeah, the gentle reminder, sure.
Well, let me ask our experts at the table that. How much does that affect people's behavior, that sort of just people talking about it?
Go ahead.
Well,
Terry,
one of the most fascinating things that's happening just this year, maybe for the first time, is the script that is being used by the callers when they're calling people on their list on the get out the vote drives, and they're not just asking them, "Do you plan to vote today? And do you need a ride?" They're asking them, "What time do you plan to vote today?" And what they found in studies is that when you ask that question, that's much more likely to stimulate somebody to actually plan their day around a time to vote. That's really very interesting to me. And so I think that those are that if you exactly as the caller says, there's no harm in asking. One of the things that happened in the 2008 election is that 90% of the people who registered to vote actually voted. And 4 years before, it was 88%. So if you can get people registered, they're going to go.
And where are those numbers from? That's here in mid-Missouri, or
no,
that's nationwide?
National. That's a national statistic. Yeah. So if you can get them to register, they're going to go.
Interesting.
Here's one other point that I think the young adults would be somewhat more interested in is, could we vote in the bank? Could we vote at the grocery store? Can we get the electronic pieces as tight as what they are on credit cards so that you can enter your vote either before or after you shop for groceries?
Right. And this gets at, Joyce, you're getting at the question we were talking about right before we brought you into the conversation of this. How far can we extend the voting to make it accessible without jeopardizing the integrity of the process?
From my perspective of watching students, they don't have a long line of patients. And so when we talk about people waiting for 2 hours to vote, that sounds so atrocious to a student who's just leaving class so they can just get to vote in time to get to work.
Yeah.
And they don't have the luxury, in a sense, that someone who's retired might have of being able to stand in line for a little bit longer and a little bit more patience, perhaps, or people who are in their 40s, 50s, not in school, single job. Those with multiple jobs are even more pressed in some sense than my students are.
Right. Let me ask that to our panelists here, John Petrosik. How far can we go? How accessible can we make voting without, before we start impeding on the integrity of it?
The brief answer is I don't have an answer to that question. Mm-hmm. We make, as Marvin pointed out, we make voting very easy today, extraordinarily easy. I mean, in 2008, somewhere between 35 and 37%, the count varies, voted before Election Day. They either voted absentee or they're early voting. Again, Missouri is very unusual. It's a very conservative, restrictive state by comparison. There are states in the United States where all voting is done by mail. You don't even have to show up. The mail ballot, when it was introduced in Oregon and later Washington, it increased turnout by about 7 percentage points. So the world did not turn upside down. Each of these adds something, but at the end of the day, a large number of people are not going to vote because they don't care. Just to jump in one European example, favorite country I've lived in, the Netherlands, they used to have mandatory voting there. Turnout was 97%. They repealed the mandatory voting law, but they said you had to show up at the polling place. Didn't have to vote. So classically Dutch, but you had to show up. Turnout dropped another 20 points, just like that. Okay, they didn't do it. So we're not unique. When you take away the compulsion to vote, most of us vote because we feel we should. It's right up there with a good Christian who feels like they have to be in church on Sunday or in the synagogue on whatever the appropriate day is. That's why most people vote. They feel they should. For people who don't have that norm, you can make it easier and easier, but at the end of the day, the fact that they don't feel like they have to vote is the thing that keeps them from voting, because there is almost no place in America now where the restrictions are anything like significant. So we have to work on that norm, and when the norm is absent, you do what you pointed out, which is you go out and get the voter. Somebody knocks on the door, some friendly face they know, and say, wouldn't you like to vote? Take them to the polls if necessary. That's what well-organized parties do when we don't have that kind of structure in the United States. Yeah. We used to.
Yeah. It's going to come down to the politicians, like you said. They're going to have to start making themselves more visible. They're going to figure out a way to make it as easy, as simple as possible. Why? Because who would ever thought that the president would have a BlackBerry? Who seen that 20 years ago? So with time, we are going to have to stay with modern-day time. Whatever is in the generation that's coming up next, they're going to have to figure out the easiest way for them. Because like you said, once you get up in age, you feel like this is what you must do. You feel like this is the honorable thing to do as a citizen, a U.S. citizen.
Yeah, and once, I mean, we have a generation now who are used to paying for their coffee with their cell phone, right? So once they they matriculate through.
You can imagine, I mean, I can just, hypothetically speaking, I could see you casting your vote on your iPhone. I mean, whoever thought that we would be using the iPhones and the BlackBerry for what we use it for today? I mean, it's hard to say how the media would direct us. Yep. Because I know at one point everybody at this panel thought I would never get a Facebook page. I would never have anything to do with Facebook.
I don't have a Facebook page. So you lost that one.
Yeah, I don't either. But, you know, this thing about people raise a lot of concerns about computerized voting and somebody being able to rig and manipulate the results, because you can't be positively sure that the vote you cast with that computer is the vote that they're going to count.
Yeah, we're going to have to come back after the break. We're going to stop here for a second. I'll remind everyone this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. We're talking about voter turnout today. I want to thank Joyce, who's been on the phone with us, for calling in today, and everyone else in our conversation. You can join our conversation, too, by giving us a call at 573-882-8925. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back, and I hope that you'll stick around and join our conversation then. We'll be right back.
cautious person. I'm wary.
And welcome back. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're having a nice conversation about voter turnout. Joining me in the studio are John Petrosik, professor and chair of the Political Science Department at the University of Missouri, Terry Smith, executive vice president and dean for academic affairs at Columbia College, and Marvin Stemmons, leader of the Swag the Vote campaign in Columbia, which is encouraging young people to vote. For those of you in our audience, if voter turnout is important, should we require it? Or maybe just make it easier? We're going to talk more about those ideas, and we hope that you'll share your ideas as well. Give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org, or you can go online to kbia.org, follow the link for Intersection, and you will find our online chat, which you can join as well. Terry, before we went into the break, I had to stop you, but I want to continue the thought that you were working on before we went into the break.
If computerized voting has come under a lot of scrutiny and criticism about not being transparent and being subject to fraud and abuse, by several orders of magnitude, the idea of being able to vote online or being able to vote through Facebook or social media would, it would introduce, by several orders of magnitude, even worse concerns. I think that there's an inevitability about serious discussions about that, but that is a brave new world to be getting to for people to be able to. We don't even let people take polls online where we say that these are meaningful results. If are we going to take the next step and actually let people cast their ballot online? I think we're a long way technologically and culturally from that.
Well, let's talk about what would have to happen, because I have electronic banking. I move money around in my bank account online. I feel like I have a reasonable assumption that no one's going to get in there and steal my balances. Why should I be worried that someone might steal my vote as opposed to these other ways that we interact online without that kind of fear?
Because these stakes are much
higher.
Whatever you have in your bank account is trivial compared to the ability to manipulate your vote and grab it and misapply it to a political end.
Okay. everyone at the table is looking at me with some serious looks on your faces. Go ahead, John.
I think Terry said the right thing. Manipulating the vote in some fraudulent way in order to give my people control of government is a much greater payoff than stealing a few dollars from anybody's account. And there are going to be people who are motivated to do that. Maybe no one we know, but there are places in America where that motivation historically is high, and it remains high to this day. And somebody will do it.
Interesting. And what about is what we have now the best system that we could hope for then? In terms of having to go out on election day, go to where the polls are, cast a ballot by hand.
But we don't do that. I mean, almost 40, as I said, at least 35, maybe as high as 37%. Voted as much as a month before November 2nd, what was it, in 2008. But they've as much as a month before the election. So there's no requirement that everybody has to queue on election day. In fact, as I said, in some places you can mail in your ballot. And it's a tradition in a large number of states. Missouri is something of an exception, where people have weeks before election day in which to cast their ballot. All the discussion we're seeing now about early voting is a reflection of that. And some of it causes anxiety because early voting is much easier to manipulate than election day voting.
And why is that? I mean, what's going on there that makes early voting more problematic?
You can take people to the polls. You just gather everybody up and you walk them on down and encourage them to do the right thing.
Well, and historically, the phrase vote early and often, it's considered a joke now. Well, back in the 1880s, that's how it happened. And we look at turnout rates back, a century and a half ago, and they were in the 80, 85% for national elections. That's a golden age. I wish we could do that. Well, a lot of that voting was multiple voting. They would put people on, they put a keg of whiskey on a wagon, and they'd invite all the men. Women, of course, couldn't vote in then, get, you know, on the wagons, and then they would take them to a polling place, and then they'd vote, and then they'd take them to another polling place, and they'd vote again, and pretty soon the keg was dry, and they'd get another keg and get some more people. So, I mean, you don't have to do that in very many cities before you get a pretty strong turnout and a lot of fraud, and the city machines at the time were awfully good at that.
Hmm. Interesting. I mean, I don't even know what to say to that, because it seems these days how unthinkable something like that would be in terms of rounding up people and causing them to vote in a certain way.
It's not that absent today. Nobody really knows how much voter fraud there is, which is why we have this endless battle between the Democrats and Republicans. Democrats are sure this is nothing more than a scheme to suppress the vote. Republicans, not uniformly, but many will insist that this is a way that produces that there's a fraudulent vote involved in a lot of things that needs some control and constraint. It happens. We don't know how much there is. It happens. And one of the reasons we don't know how much it is, in part, is that people who are doing it control the local government that is doing it. I mean, if you're the mayor or the county commission or the sheriff, you're probably involved in this. You're not likely to investigate the things that are keeping you and your friends in power. Now, I do not mean to give the impression that this is a widespread, massive phenomenon in America. But it does happen, and I know more than a few places where absentee ballots have been manipulated, particularly around senior citizens who can't get to vote, and where the parties will go around and essentially vote these people. I'm not suggesting it's massive, and I'm not suggesting an election was ever turned by it, but those kinds of things go on. And if we're not reasonably careful, we have no idea how much more of it will go on. Mm-hmm. And I could be wrong that much more would go on in any case, but the question is, do you want to take the chance?
Well, we have some questions from our online chat room. One of them from Dan in our chat room here. Is anyone working on the technology to sort out this online voting thing? So is there something in the works that might make an electronic option that is still – I mean, is anyone working on it?
Yes, but I don't know enough about it to comment.
Okay.
I'm the same, but I'm thinking. Let's say I want to. There's an opportunity for me to vote online, and so they send the ballot to my email address. Well, it's not going to take me long to figure out that I'm going to get about 7 or 8 email addresses, and they'll send a ballot to each one, and then I'll vote and send it in, and they'll have to figure out which one of me is the one that they need to count, and that's just one of many, many problems with this. And they've seen it with trying to do polling online, and it's exactly the same issue. There are just so many issues, and I agree with you, John. I don't know how they begin to sort this out. The thing about voting, though, it's a communal act too. I mean, and that's one of the things we've lost with early voting, because I'm very old-fashioned about this, but tomorrow morning I'm going to go to my precinct, which is not far from here, and I'm going to be with a bunch of people, and I'm going to be doing the most important thing I think I do as a citizen. And there's going to be a bunch of us there together, and it's just communal citizenship. And I know I've cast my vote, and I know because we got great elections in this county, it's going to count, and it's going to be fairly counted. And I've done, I've done my duty, and if I can't do anything else, I can vote, and I can make a difference in that way. And I think we lose something when there's no physical activity involved in voting, and when we can't do it in the presence of other people.
But I mean, isn't that kind of idealistic?
It's old fashioned. I mean, I confess. How's it idealistic, though?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess, on this program, we talk a lot about the way that technology changes things, and the idea that you would have to be forced to go to a polling place in order to have that sense of community, as opposed to all the other myriad opportunities that we have to interact with our fellow citizens in various real-world and electronic ways, I suppose.
I suspect someday we won't. I mean, Marvin's point is the right one. Technology is going to reshape what we do in the future, and I think this moment of citizenship that you were describing is going to be more and more thin and probably less common somewhere in the indefinite future. I don't know where, but somewhere in the indefinite future. It's not here yet, and I think it's a mistake to assume that because it's not, there are massive impediments that depress the turnout rate. People don't vote because they're just bad citizens. My apologies to anyone who tells me otherwise, but they're just not interested. They're not informed. They don't really care. they don't feel strongly attached to the Democrats or the Republicans, so who wins seems indifferent. Their welfare is going to go up or down, irrespective of who's in Washington, D.C., they think, and for many of them are right. And turning out to vote is fundamentally an act of citizenship, not one in which people have a stake, and I think we get ourselves in a jam when we try to persuade people, boy, you have a stake in this election. Well, they do, but there's such a distance between their lives and what's being talked about that I think we sell them something that they know is patently false most of the time.
Marvin, your thoughts on that?
I think that people, I don't think it's they don't care. I think that lack of knowledge, lack of understanding what's going on around them. I think that, let's say, not middle class, let's say below middle class. They really don't even have time to sit back and watch news or pay attention because they have so they playing catch up. They don't know. They don't understand how important it really is because they playing catch up. They don't know. I mean, they don't have the luxury to relax and listen to a news station talk about politics because they got to worry about how they getting to work or how their kids are getting this. And I think that they get discouraged, I mean, from lack of knowledge. I mean, when you usually find a person to say, oh, I don't care, it ain't that they don't care. Lack of knowledge of whatever it is that you just asked them.
Marvin, what do you think it would take to change that?
Oh, wow. I think it has to start with each individual community. I mean, I think before you can work outer, you got to work inner. I mean, if nobody in your home is gonna believe in your system, what makes you think the following people out here is gonna believe in your system? I think that community. I think that when we did swag the vote, come out, register to vote, I think it was we was thinking outside the box. Speaking the language that they understand.
And what were you saying to them?
Just basically this, you sit back, you listen, you go around, you hear people talk, and at the end of the day it was like, I don't care. I mean, no, that's the wrong answer.
Well, I mean, pretend that I'm one of the kids that gives you that I don't care. What do you say to them?
What is it that you don't care about? You know, that's
none
the first
of it. I don't
question.
Care about none of it, right?
That's the first question. What is it that you don't care about? Like you said, none of it. None of what? Where do you plan to be in 4 years? I don't care who you vote for. Like Mr. Terry said, that is your right. Exercise that.
I mean, in a way, it sounds like the conversation you're having is about a lot more than just going to cast a vote.
I mean, you have to know what's going on around you. I mean, don't worry about what's going on in Indiana or Illinois. Worry about what's going on in Boone County first, the city limits of Columbia. Then start understanding that small amount. Then you'll be like, okay, I understand this. Then you'll go to the county. Then you start going to the state. Then you can start venturing out. If you don't know anything, how you going to go to Indiana laws and what they got on their amendments? Why would you do that? You don't even know what's going on in your own city. So I think it comes down to asking questions. I mean, trust me, I walked through and I asked a lot of questions because I didn't know anything. I mean, I didn't know anything. I mean, I was one of the ones that, man, you ain't got to vote, man. You ain't got to vote, you know? Then I was like, wow, yeah, we better vote.
Let me remind everyone, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about voter turnout, and joining me in the studio are John Petrosik, professor and chair of the Political Science Department at the University of Missouri, Terry Smith, executive vice president and dean for academic affairs at Columbia College, and you just heard from Marvin Stemmons, leader of the Swag the Vote campaign in Columbia, which is encouraging young people to vote. For those of you in our audience, we have a few minutes left for you to join our conversation, either with your thoughts on voting or your questions for our panelists. So give us a call. Our number is 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. I want to ask a question. We've been talking a lot about, sort of the difference between voters and non-voters. What's a realistic expectation? I mean, is a 90%, 95% voter turnout a realistic expectation, or are there, how many people are just not going to vote?
I think that there are going to be there is a certain upper limit of people who are actually going to vote who are eligible. There are certain people who are prohibited from voting, of course, in the United States. Felons in all states are some. If you paid your debt to society, then you're allowed to vote again. But if you're a felon, I don't think there's a single state that will let you vote. Of course, you've got to be an American citizen. And people who are institutionalized can't vote. In fact, they did an interesting, it's been years, but one of the most fascinating surveys I've ever seen was they surveyed inmates of an insane asylum and did a political attitude survey. And they found out that their attitudes were basically the same as John's and mine and Marvin's here, which is kind of scary. But the people who are certifiably insane, they found in this one study, aren't different politically from you and me. But the most interesting thing is that the people who chronically don't vote, the ones that are just stubborn and don't show up to the polls, and some, by the way, they say, I'm not going to vote because things are going fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, why should I vote? Don't rock the boat, really. But again, I haven't seen the current studies about this, but they've surveyed these people, and some people have said, "Man, it's a good thing these people aren't voting, because if they came to the polls, they'd vote in radicals, they'd vote in extremists, they'd vote for the revolutionary parties." And they found that their attitude pretty much like ours, the people who do vote, and so we shouldn't be afraid of the non-voters. In terms of the fact that they would upset the apple cart or the status quo.
Yeah, John, you sent us some slides beforehand, and one of them sort of supports this, right?
The best data answer to your question is the average turnout rate across some pool of countries that are vaguely similar to the United States is about 82-83%. And that's probably the equilibrium high level, that if you didn't do anything other than normal get-out-the-vote activity, you could probably generate something like a turnout rate of the eligible population approaching 82%. After that, you're going to have to do something spectacular. You're going to have to compel them to vote and compel them with some kind of sanction.
Yeah.
Which I mentioned to one of your people earlier, I'll mention it to the audience just to shock everybody, I would love to put points on people's driver's license.
Like for not voting?
Yeah. Why not? Citizenship obligation. Drive too fast? Your driver's license picks up a couple of points. Don't vote. We can decide whether a presidential election is worth two or one. I guarantee you it'll work well for 18 to 24-year-olds because they've got driver's licenses that are in danger within weeks of getting it. They would vote just for that reason.
Of course, nobody is
going to do this, and I'm going to be stoned on the way back to my office. But that's the kind of sanction that will produce higher levels of turnout because it's indifference. Not that they're ignorant. People are just indifferent. They're not motivated. I'm going to give them some motivation.
Well, that's kind of the stick motivation. Norman Ornstein in The Atlantic suggested a carrot motivation where, your voting receipt turns into a lottery ticket. So everybody who votes gets entered to win lots of money on the flip side. What do you think of things like that, that idea of trying to make it a really positive thing to go vote and motivate people that way?
I'm not confident about the lottery ticket. I'll pass to my fellow panelists on that one.
I think voting ought to be its own reward. It ought to have intrinsic value. I think carrots are inappropriate, personally.
Interesting. And what about the sticks? What about the opposite side points on a voter's
license? Well, I'm the same about that. I mean, you have the right to vote. We've made it as easy as it's probably going to get in America to do that. And if you don't show up, it's your democratic choice. You've decided not to decide.
Right. What about the there's an argument about this that by not requiring people to vote, that the people who actually do go vote become more polarized, that they're highly motivated one way or another. They're not the mass in the middle that tends to not be strong feeling, and that by having that be the people who actually go out and vote, we wind up with a more polarized democracy. What about that argument?
That's an entirely separate program.
And we can come back and talk about that at some other time. But so there's no short way to address that.
I don't think so. I don't think the connection works that way. The polarized people are the office holders. The most polarized people are the most politically active. Probably the three of us are more likely to have extreme issue positions than the median voter in the city of Columbia. So I think that connection is interesting argument, but probably empirically flawed, probably wrong.
Huh. And when you and it's compounded by campaign finance and the laws and the restrictions or lack thereof, and also the whole redistricting process that draws these lines so that the partisan politicians tend to be in safer and safer districts. And this is both those things are fairly recent developments historically.
Yeah. And each of those could deserve an hour of conversation. Absolutely. On its own, right?
I mean, it's like the lady said on the TV earlier. If the politicians would start making themselves more visible, they may start seeing a better turnout, especially on the local side. I mean, you're important enough when it comes down to campaigning, almost time for the race, they beat the streets. They everywhere. But what about them other 2 or 3 years? You know, think you ought to make it mandatory that they come out to whatever ward they was, whoever they get their votes from, should come out and, you know, see what the people voting for you, see what they are. Just don't want their votes.
That's an interesting idea, that every politician should have to knock on a certain number of doors every month or something part of their job.
Right. I mean, if not that, but something. I mean, you got campaign, you want to come out and have a campaign rally, come out and have a campaign get-together. You know, it ain't got to be once a month. It could be once a quarter in different areas, depending on the politician. I mean,
Marvin, couldn't that be one of your social media apps? Where, I mean,
right, yeah.
You know, they'll let the office holders leverage technology in that way. I mean, just be available on through Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and many are.
And Obama, 4 years ago, he understood how to get it. So he used
important part of his win.
Yes,
that's right.
He used that so people felt. I know we feel a certain way. We could see you, touch you, and understand or think we know you or whatever. Then we more likely to support you, if that makes sense. I mean, if you come out and hang out or whatever it is, then you know who's getting your vote. And then you understand, okay, I got this. I have Boone County. I need to work on Saline County or something because I do my work in Boone County. I know what to expect out of Boone County. Or, yeah, I think they need to be held accountable for our votes.
But part of that, too, is the voters themselves, right? I mean, you mentioned, earlier, Marvin, people not paying attention to what's going on locally, and that's a good place to start. You know, when Barack Obama, the candidate, came to Columbia, people, myself included, waited in line hours to get into that because it was a big national politician coming to Columbia from either side. I mean, it doesn't even matter which party and whatever they are.
And I'll bet you voted in every election since you were eligible to vote.
Well, yeah, I'm a fairly engaged voter and probably not every election. But, yeah, I mean, I'm hosting this program, right? I mean, we decided to have this conversation today because of this, obviously. You know, I think this is important. But where I was going with this is, so we get those kinds of crowds. Individual voters are willing to do that for a national race. The candidate forms that we get for Columbia City Council, for Boone County Commission, for, you know, the next level of offices all the way up until you start getting to governor and presidential level races become much less populated with voters trying to get informed about them. What about that? What do we do to change that if voter turnout? I mean, is that even connected to voter turnout? And if so, Is that important to address that?
I think I'll defer to Marvin on that one.
I don't know if it's... I'm going to go back to the politicians. Once again, it's on them. I mean, and it's sad because none of them has thought outside the box of what would keep me in office. What would make my race easier when it's time for me to come up for city council or whatever in the next 2 years or 4 years? What? How can I do this to make this easier for me next time? Well, I've been elected to be here for the next 2 years. Well, within them 2 years, I'm going to make sure that I'm visible throughout my community. I'm going to make sure that I understand where they are when it comes time to vote. So when you come to run against me, I just made your job harder because the people understand who I am.
Yeah. I mean,
that makes sense.
What I think I'm hearing you say is the politicians could be doing a better job of
connecting
with the people who are not already likely to vote.
Easy.
And what do you think of that, Terry, in terms of that connection between the people who are within the political system and the people who are, you know, potentially feeling disenfranchised?
I don't know how much difference it would make ultimately, and it's compounded by, especially once you get outside of the local level, this almost exponential need now to raise money. And, if I'm a politician, I'm not going to go talk to me. I'm not going to go talk to Marvin. I'm not going to go talk to John because we can't give much money. Mm-hmm. I'm going to spend a lot of time with somebody who can write me a big check. So that come the next campaign, I've got a war chest that hopefully I can frighten all potential competitors off. But if not, I can just bombard them with ads so that I can win. It is just the modern condition of campaigns because they're just so awash in money. So if I've got one evening to spend, and it's going out and talking to the voters or spending it with somebody who's going to write me a check for $10,000, give me a hard problem.
As a politician. So,
as a politician.
I mean, what you just described makes it seem very logical then for people to feel slightly disenfranchised.
I don't know if I would describe it that way. Every public official worries about losing an election. Very few do. Almost at any level. And the number of people who actually defeated are very few. And it's tied with a lot of dynamics, some of which Terry mentioned. And voters don't factor into that in quite the way our discussion is assuming they do. I mean, the secret to getting elected is to get one more vote than your opponent. And it doesn't matter whether the turnout is 25%, 55%, or 75%. Elections in America are not the kind of, I mean, the graphs we probably won't get to, but that you saw. It doesn't matter whether turnout is 85% or not, so long as the people who are there actually vote for me. And the effort in America, certainly over the last 50 years, has been to persuade what people like myself would sort of call the equilibrium likely voters to vote for me and not to worry about generating a much higher turnout. Getting a higher turnout is actually hard to do for all the reasons we're sitting here talking mm-hmm. about it. It's hard to get people who don't vote to vote. Although if you habituate them the way you've been doing, they become voters. But if I know who's out there, I've got a very simple task. I have to persuade all the people who are with me to be with me. I have to ensure that people who might vote for him don't. And I'd like to find some way to wedge a few of his voters my way. And that's a media and a persuasion effort, not a mobilization effort.
Okay, we're going to have to.
That's been true for a long time.
We're going to have to end there, unfortunately. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us today on our program. First, John Petrosik, professor and chair of the Political Science Department at the University of Missouri. Terry Smith, executive vice president and dean for academic affairs at Columbia College. And Marvin Stemmons, leader of the Swag the Vote campaign in Columbia, which is encouraging young people to vote. Thanks also to our callers today and for the people who joined our online chat room and shared their comments there. We'd like to remind those of you enjoying this as a rebroadcast that Intersection takes place live for a full hour from 2 to 3 every Monday. You can join us each Monday afternoon by listening to KBIA or by going online to kbia.org and following the link for Intersection. There you'll be able to watch a video feed of the program, submit your questions and your comments, and participate in that online chat with others in the audience. I'd like to thank our whole staff for bringing Intersection to you this week. And take care. Don't forget to vote if you want to. And we'll see you next week.
And if you don't.